And the tagline for the U.S. Army was an army of one. And so that lasted for about 5 years, and then in 2006, the tagline became Army Strong. And so this was the ad campaign to sort of rally people after. Actually, the previous year, it was somewhat of a disappointing recruiting year for the U.S. Army. And so they hired a new ad agency, and they wanted to rally people around this idea of Army Strong. And they would say, they're strong, and then there's Army Strong. And now that ad campaign is over, but it's still actually an internal slogan for the Army. They understand what it means to be Army Strong. And so it sort of embodies this idea of having a Army Strong character, or Army Strong purpose, or Army Strong mission. And so that became the slogan for the U.S. Army. And kind of what I want to sort of rally us as a church towards is not Army Strong, but Jesus Strong. And so we want to grow to be Jesus Strong as a church. And obviously Jesus Strong, that could be an adjective, right? That could describe your marriage, to have a Jesus Strong marriage. Or it could describe our life as a Christian. We could be a Jesus Strong disciple, or we could have a Jesus Strong mission, or a Jesus Strong faith, or any of those things. Or it could be sort of caveman talk, right? Wayne weak, Jesus strong, right? Dustin weak, Jesus strong. But the idea here is the world has an idea of what strong looks like. The world has an idea of what a strong marriage looks like. The world has an idea of what a strong Christian looks like, the religious world. The world has an idea of what a strong family looks like, or what a strong sense of character looks like. The world has their picture of strong, but then there's Jesus strong. And so that's what we're going to be talking about over the next number of months, is how can we grow to be Jesus strong disciples? How can we be Jesus strong in every aspect of our life? And you know, the Gospel of Mark, we're mainly going to be in the Gospel of Mark today, but the Gospel of Mark has a thread that goes through the entire Gospel. And one of the main purposes of the Gospel is to explain who is Jesus. And so we're going to talk a little bit about who Jesus is. And so right away in Mark chapter 1 and verse 1, it says that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God. So right away, in Mark's gospel, the reader knows who Jesus is. And then in chapter 1, verse 11, I'll just give you a litany of different passages. In chapter 1, verse 11, there's a voice from heaven. It says, "This is my Son, whom I love and am well pleased." And then chapter 1, verse 24, there's an evil spirit that says, "I know who you are, the Holy One of God." Chapter 3, verse 11, an evil spirit says, "You are the Son of God." Chapter 3, verse 22, the scribes, they think that Jesus has Beelzebul. Chapter 6, verse 3, Jesus is in his hometown, and they say, "Is not this the carpenter?" Chapter 6, verse 14 through 16, Herod thought he was John the Baptist. And if you go back to chapter 4 and verse 41, it's the story right before the story we're going to look at in Mark chapter 5. And Jesus calms the storm, and they say, the disciples say, "Who then is this, that even the winds and the waves obey him?" And so the Gospel of Mark, the reader knows who Jesus is, and the evil spirits seem to know who Jesus is, and Jesus knows who Jesus is. The people that often struggle to understand who Jesus is are the disciples themselves. And so they struggle to understand the parables that Jesus talks about. They struggle to understand Jesus walking on water, or the feeding of the 5,000. They're struggling to grasp just exactly who is this man they're following. You know, and how much more might we struggle to grasp who Jesus really is if the disciples who knew and spoke with Jesus were trying to grasp this throughout Jesus' whole ministry? How much more are we going to have to dig into our Bibles and pray more and dig more into the life as a disciple to figure out just exactly who Jesus is? And so we'll look at this story in chapter 5, and it shares something with us about who Jesus is. Chapter 5, verse 1 through 13. It says, They went across the lake to the region of the Gerasenes. When Jesus got out of the boat, a man with an evil spirit came from the tombs to meet him. This man lived in the tombs, and no one could bind him anymore, not even with a chain. For he had often been chained hand and foot, but he tore the chains apart and broke the irons on his feet. No one was strong enough to subdue him. Night and day among the tombs and in the hills, he would cry out and cut himself with stones. When he saw Jesus from a distance, he ran and fell on his knees in front of him. He shouted at the top of his voice, "What do you want with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? Swear to God that you won't torture me." For Jesus had said to him, "Come out of this man, you evil spirit." Then Jesus asked him, "What is your name?" "My name is Legion," he replied, "for we are many." And he begged Jesus again and again not to send them out of the area. A large herd of pigs was feeding on the nearby hillside. The demons begged Jesus, "Send us among the pigs. Allow us to go into them." He gave them permission, and the evil spirits came out and went into the pigs. The herd, about 2,000 in number, rushed down the steep bank into the lake and were drowned. And so here you have sort of an interesting story with Jesus and the disciples getting out of the boat. They come to this region, and this man comes out with an evil spirit, and everything about this story, everything about this man seems to communicate that this man is desperate and destructive. And so you think about his surroundings, and you think about his history, and you think about his current behavior, and this guy is desperate and destructive. It says that he came to the region of the Gerasenes, and we don't quite know exactly where this place is, so it's a little bit mysterious, but what we can clearly tell from the story is that it's a Gentile area. It says that he's from the tombs, and so generally outside of the town would be the tombs, because they didn't want to be defiled or be unclean, and so to be among the tombs, likely this guy was living among the tombs maybe to consult with the dead, and that was explicitly forbidden in the Old Testament. It talks about a large herd of pigs feeding on the distant, or the nearby hillside rather, and so this is a further indication of it being a Gentile area. The surroundings of this story for a Jewish reader would say, this place is unclean, it's defiled, it's not the place you want to be. If you think about his history, it said no one could bind him anymore. And so, apparently, at some point, this person could be restrained to some degree. But it's getting worse. No one can bind him anymore, not even with a chain. And then it says no one was strong enough to subdue him. Everything about this person's history is bad. This guy is desperate, and it says that he cried out and he began cutting himself with stones. Now, as we think about this story, most of us, if not all of us, have ever seen anyone with an evil spirit. But we probably have seen the darkness of sin. We probably have seen the destructive powers of evil. We probably have seen the dehumanizing work of Satan in the world. And so we can look all around at our surroundings. We can see that we live in a fallen world. We, even in Fort Wayne, we can see the elements of darkness all around us. And we can look around too and see that nothing seems to be working to subdue evil. Nothing seems to have the power to overcome evil at work. And we can look around and we can see people that are desperate as well. They're crying out for something. They're destructive. They're cutting themselves with stones. And so all around us, we can look and see people that are desperate. They need hope. And they're destructive. They need help. And Jesus can bring both. In chapter 5, verse 14, it says this. Those tending the pigs ran off and reported this in the town and countryside, and the people went out to see what had happened. When they came to Jesus, they saw the man who had been possessed by the legion of demons sitting there, dressed and in his right mind. and they were afraid. Those who had seen it told the people what had happened to the demon-possessed man and told about the pigs as well. Then the people began to plead with Jesus to leave their region. As Jesus was getting into the boat, the man who had been demon-possessed begged to go with him. Jesus did not let him, but said, "Go home to your family and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and how he has had mercy on you." So the man went away and began to tell in the Decapolis how much Jesus had done for him. And all the people were amazed. You know, this situation is desperate and destructive. But as Jesus enters the scene and casts out this evil spirit, this person's life is transformed. It says that they looked and they saw the man who had been possessed by the legion of demons sitting there, dressed and in his right mind. You know, the overwhelming message of this passage is that Jesus is strong enough. Jesus is strong enough to subdue the powers of evil that are at work in Fort Wayne, in our city. Jesus is strong enough to subdue the powers of evil that are at work in our relationships. And most importantly, Jesus is strong enough to subdue the powers of evil within our own hearts. You know, this man is sitting there dressed and in his right mind. You know, we've all seen it. Sin makes us out of our minds. Sin, there's an insanity to sin. And oftentimes people can look at someone else and we can see the work or the insanity of sin. We often can't see it within our own hearts. And so we need a little bit of help at times. But we can see that as we look at someone else's life and we can go, man, why in the world would they make that choice? Why in the world would they continually do the same thing that is causing so much damage in their life? But Jesus can put us in our right minds. Jesus can transform our lives. And here's what transformation says. Transformation proclaims to the world all around us that there's somebody that's strong enough. It says to people all around us that there's a power that's greater than even a legion of demons. And so when we come to Jesus and Jesus does something in our life and helps us to overcome, it says to people that, wait, Jesus is strong enough than pornography. Or Jesus is strong enough to overcome pride. Or Jesus is strong enough to overcome whatever sin it is you wrestle with. You know, all throughout the Bible, there's this message that Jesus can make us new. He can put us in our right minds. And so 2 Corinthians 5, verse 17 says, "Therefore, if anyone is in Christ, he is a new creation. The old has gone, the new has come." 2 Corinthians 4, verse 16 to 18. "Therefore, we do not lose heart. Though outwardly we are wasting away, yet inwardly we are being renewed day by day. For our light and momentary troubles are achieving for us an eternal glory that far outweighs them all." So we fix our eyes not on what is seen, but what is unseen. For what is seen is temporary, but what is unseen is eternal. Or Colossians 3:10, it says, "Put on the new self, which is being renewed in knowledge in the image of its creator." You know, Jesus can transform us. He has the power to help us to overcome. He has the power to put us in our right mind. And if you're in your right mind today, if you have overcome some things in your life, it's because Jesus has worked in your life. If you're different now than you were 10 years ago or a year ago or 3 weeks ago, it's because Jesus has helped you to overcome some things. Jesus has given you power to overcome. And you can look at different things you've done, maybe Bible study you've done or times you've prayed about that particular sin. But if you're different, it's because Jesus has changed you. And if you're out of your mind, if you're crying out, if you're cutting yourself, so to speak, well, your only hope is Jesus. Your only help is Jesus to change your life. You know, a lot of times, you know, I think when we think about the good news of the gospel, we think about forgiveness, which is an incredible aspect of the good news. But if that's all you think about when you think about the gospel, you're only thinking about a fraction of the good news. Because Jesus can, he not only brings forgiveness, he also brings deliverance. He also rescues us from the things that enslave us. He also can help us to change our lives. And as this person is put back in his right mind, the crowds that come out, these pig herders or tenders, go out and they tell people about what Jesus did. And they come and they're the greatest evangelists in the Bible because the whole crowds come out to see what Jesus did. And they're afraid. They're fearful. And most often in the Bible, the response to God doing something is fear. There's this mixture of fascination and fear. You know, right before this story, as I said, Jesus was in a boat with his disciples crossing over to the other side. And as they're in the boat, there's this furious squall that starts up. And so Jesus' disciples were in this boat with Jesus. And in the midst of that furious squall, they were afraid. They were fearful. And then Jesus calms the storm. And the disciples are no longer afraid of the storm because that's calm, but now they're afraid of who? Jesus. So now they're afraid of the person they're in the boat with. Then they get off the boat and this crazy guy comes out to meet Jesus. This guy that's possessed by the evil spirit. And so now undoubtedly they're a little bit afraid. And then Jesus puts him in his right mind and now the people there are afraid. And so everywhere you go with Jesus, there's fear. The notable feature about walking with Jesus is fear. There's fears swirling up every which way you look. And so the disciples just can't seem to get a break. First we're afraid of the storm. Now Jesus calms the storm. And now, okay, who's the guy in the boat that I'm trapped with in the boat now? I can't wait to get to the other side. Now I get to land and there's this other guy that comes out. Now I'm terrified here. Everywhere they look, there's fears of being without Jesus in the storm. There's fears of being with Jesus in a boat. And you know, all of us are going to have fears. But which ones do you want? Which fears are you going to be okay with? We're all going to learn to settle in with one or the other. Either you're going to go without Jesus, and you're going to be afraid of all the challenges in life that you face, or you'll go with Jesus, and there's going to be some other fears that are associated there. But one way or the other, there's going to be fear. Look over in Mark chapter 8 and verse 22. Mark chapter 8. The climactic point of the Gospel of Mark seems to occur in this chapter, and it's when Peter finally confesses on behalf of the disciples that Jesus is the Christ. And so up until this point of the story that we just looked at, the evil spirits know who Jesus is, we the reader knows who Jesus is, Jesus knows who Jesus is, but the disciples are kind of wrestling with who Jesus is. And so finally in Mark chapter 8, Peter confesses on behalf of the disciples that Jesus is the Christ. They finally grasp who Jesus is. But right before Peter's confession is this strange little story of Jesus healing a blind man. And it says in verse 22, they came to Bethsaida and some people brought a blind man and begged Jesus to touch him. He took the blind man by the hand and led him outside the village. When he had spit on the man's eyes and put his hands on him, Jesus asked, "Do you see anything?" He looked up and said, "I see people. They look like trees walking around." Once more, Jesus put his hands on the man's eyes. Then his eyes were opened. His sight was restored, and he saw everything clearly. And so here's this strange story. Jesus healing a blind man. And you got to ask yourself, so was Jesus' miraculous power just a little bit rusty this day? Was Jesus sort of just maxed out that day? Maybe he didn't get a lot of time to pray, and so, you know, he's just sort of struggling to perform the miracles he otherwise would have performed. Is Jesus' fuel tank on E? But he spits on this guy's face, and then he touches the guy and goes, "So what do you see?" And his vision of people is a little bit fuzzy, right? He sees, you know, if you just hear that part of the story, you're thinking, what kind of drugs is this guy on? That he's looking around and sees, you know, just people walking around like trees. Of course, that's not the whole story. And Jesus reaches out, touches him again, and finally he can see clearly. But you know, the New Testament writers, inspired by God, include stories and weave them together to tell an overarching message. If Jesus seems to be limited in his power, it's because Jesus intended to do that. Jesus could have did it exactly how he wanted to do. But he is trying to convey a greater point. That sometimes we don't see things clearly. Sometimes we don't see who Jesus is. And so we, like this blind man, need a second touch. We need to go back to Jesus to build our relationship with God. When our vision of Jesus is blurry, we need this second touch. We need to consistently go back for a second, and sometimes a third, and sometimes a fourth, and sometimes a fifth touch to see who Jesus is, to grasp exactly how strong and powerful Jesus is. So let me ask you this question. How is your relationship with Jesus today? I mean, it's a basic question when you think about it. How is your relationship with Jesus? Think about it. You know, what if the quality of your relationship with Jesus was indicated by the amount of time you spent in meaningful prayer? What if that was the bottom line to your relationship with Jesus? Or what if the quality of your relationship with Jesus was indicated by the amount of time you spent in meaningful Bible study? Or meaningful fellowship, or meaningful disciple making, or simple obedience from faith. Now, the reality is, a relationship with anyone is multifaceted. It's way bigger than all of those things, and yet each of those things say something about our relationship with Jesus. Each of those things indicate something about how our relationship with Jesus is going. And the reality is, we can't shield ourselves from one of those things in favor of another. Like, I can't say, you know, I don't really pray a whole lot, but I love spending time with disciples. I get great fellowship time. And so I have a great relationship with Jesus because my fellowship is great. Or vice versa. We can't say, well, for me, I pray a lot. I mean, every day I spend tons of time praying, but you know what? I don't really get a whole lot of fellowship with other disciples. I don't really try to share my faith with anybody. We can't shield ourselves from one with another. Just like I can't say, you know, I really embrace date night with my wife, but chore day, forget about it. Now, no one would say my relationship with my wife is determined by chore day. But if I neglect one in favor of another, it says something about my relationship with my wife. That certainly wouldn't make my wife happy. And likewise, if I'm trying to build a relationship with Jesus, there's a lot that goes into my relationship with God. And so what is your relationship with Jesus like today? Now, the reality is, you might point to something like prayer, as important as prayer is, and think your relationship with Jesus is great. But I find a lot of passages in the Bible that say something to the effect that sometimes God doesn't listen to our prayers. Sometimes there's reasons that God says, yeah, I don't listen. And it may be related to one of those other things. You know, back in Mark chapter 5, this story of the man who had been demon-possessed, it says at the very end of that story, it says this man had begged to go with Jesus. He wanted to get into the boat. Yet, Jesus didn't let him. Jesus instead told him to go to your family. Or sometimes translations say, go to your friends, or sometimes go to your people. Most likely the Gentiles. But either way, the characteristic instruction for people that have been delivered from the power of evil, rescued by Jesus, the characteristic instruction is go. Go tell someone about it. You know, we have people that are, right now, are in the midst of having a baby. They're going to deliver a baby sometime soon. I guarantee that we're not, it's not going to be like weeks after the baby is born that we're going to hear about it. It's not like Brad's going to come to church and we're just going to be talking. We don't even mention the fact that his wife had a baby. And, you know, weeks later, he's going, oh yeah, my wife had a baby. No, when there's good news, out of the overflow of your heart, you're going to tell people about it. And Jesus tells this person, go. Now, I love this image of this guy trying to get in the boat with Jesus. Because I think for a lot of us, we would all love to go and be with Jesus on the other side of eternity. No more struggle, no more pain, no more heartache, no more sin, no more suffering, no more health challenges, no more anything. Well, something. Namely, we get to be with Jesus for eternity. But the only reason we're not with him right now is so we can go and tell people. We have a message to help people to be brought into the kingdom of God. We need to tell people about the Savior. And this is part of the struggle of discipleship. Because on one hand, we want to go and be with Jesus in a greater way than we are now. We can be with Jesus in a sense. But on the other hand, we're here for a particular reason. We want other people to be saved too. And so I want to encourage all of us that have been delivered from something, rescued in some way from the power of evil, that we go and tell someone. Go tell people. Go tell your coworkers. Go tell your neighbors. And let's go and help people to be strong, Jesus strong. Let's use the near future as a church to get stronger, to get Jesus strong as a church, Jesus strong in our prayer lives, in our Bible study, in our obedience, in our marriages, in our families, in our house churches, in our discipling relationships, in our evangelism. Let's be Jesus strong. Amen.